Okay, friends, now we go on. This is, it should be 81. I've been doing this incorrectly. 81. And beginning 81C. On page 241, we've just looked at the three air signs in terms of duality, equilibrium, and initiation. Initiation always signifies a unification and an overcoming of some aspect of duality, eventually through identification. So these three signs, therefore, stand for duality, sensed. Okay, that's Gemini, the soul and personality, particularly at first. Sensed, overcome, overcome and resolved, into the synthesis of the great world server. And part of the overcoming is the drawing of the two poles into a unity in Libra through the processes of contemplation, whereby subject and object become to be realized as one thing. So eventually in Aquarius we become the initiate and the great world server. From duality through fusion into unity and synthesis. The synthesis of the great world server identified with the heavenly man, identified with our own planetary logos, and bringing his contribution, rested in his experience from the wheel of life, from the sum total of energy, to the service of the whole. We have lifted our little water pot up to the heavens. It has been filled as it could be filled. And then from that water pot, whether we pour it forth from our shoulder as a great burden, or whether it is under the law of service, simply radiating from our synthetic head center, we share with all what our experiences have given us. We share it with the whole, just as the sun does, radiating, shining upon the just and the unjust. We give out the good for anyone who may be able to respond to it. Forget not, and this is important, that initiation is but another name for synthesis and fusion. The initiation is the process whereby the apparently separated, aggregated forms of the universe reconfigure into a fusion which reveals itself as a synthesis, a oneness, regardless of the apparent forms. For the initiate, then, forms are seen as forms, but they are only appearances. The essence of what they are is understood. And their non-distinctness, their essential non-distinctness, is understood. The initiate is never fooled by apparent division and has completely conquered the great heresy of separateness. So we are gradually working our way out of multiplicity, out of duality, towards fusion, unity, and synthesis, each one of which could be given a particular level, synthesis being the final stage. And it is the one who is identified as the whole who realizes the synthesis. Well, Libra is a step along the way. And the three air signs are important in this process. We do understand why it is that Aquarius, the source of the energy of universality, should be so closely related to through synthesis. The synthesis can be appreciated mentally, in terms of love, or in terms of will. The important thing is that it be registered and truly appreciated. And as we grow into the initiate consciousness, we grow into this appreciation. From another angle, you have Gemini, the twins, and mind, the cause of duality. Perhaps it is mind that divides all that is inseparably related in the factual synthesis, the incapacity of our dualistic mind to see the synthesis as it is, but to always see in terms of dualities. Libra, the balances, supermind, the cause of synthesis. And when I think of supermind, I do think of the atmic plane and the being the plane which Libra rules, being a very mental plane as well as a plane of will. So the supermind appreciates the synthesis, it sees it. And it is the cause, it operates in such a way as to bring all things into the type of relation which better reveals the synthesis. We can look at chaos, it doesn't seem that synthesis is there at all. We can look at that which is related to each other under the aegis of pure reason, and the synthesis which is much more easily revealed. The great patterns are seen. Supermind attempts to arrange things into the great and intended archetypal patterns. Mind is a great arranger, really, and the detector of arrangement. Mind registers that which is and also arranges that which is. So Manas configures. It has the power of will behind it, and it has the mobility, versatility, the power to move and to arrange all things in a certain pattern. Supermind arranges things in the intended pattern, which is an archetypal pattern. And Aquarius, the water carrier, universal mind then. What shall universal mind be considered? It's not the mind of the atmic plane per se. And why should soul be put there? We're already, in a way, into the spiritual triad. Why soul? Because I think, in a way, universal mind is the cosmic mind. It's the mind of the cosmic mental plane where the soul of the solar logos is to be found also. The soul consciousness even of the planetary logos we see in the chart on page 344, Treatise on Cosmic Fire, chart 5. So universal mind, well, you know, it's not the entire universe, but it is, via Aquarius, possible to touch into the mind of our great solar god, which is universal in its scope, at least compared to our minds. It operates within a wholeness which is cosmic. And I think it does, it is a cosmic type of mind. Supermind, I think, is atmic. Mind, per se, relates to our dual mental plane, concrete and abstract. But mind is the cause of duality. It seems we have to transcend the limitations of mind if we are going to realize the unity. And can it be that the mental process of the great beings created a electrically bipolar world which is arranged in terms of duality and perceived at first in terms of duality? Maybe duality teaches many necessary lessons, the experience of passing through duality. We develop a sense of values, and we can build in a hierarchical manner, because always that which is higher has to be placed higher. All things are not on a level in a hierarchical universe, and adjudicating between the dualities helps us build properly in a hierarchical manner. Supermind, such an amazing term. I guess it's connected with Saturn, just the way mind is connected with Mercury. So let's just say we'll call this Mercury. And we'll call this Saturn. And we'll call this universal mind, we'll call this Uranus. Interesting how all of them have a third-ray component. Mercury, a fourth-ray soul, but probably an ultimately third-ray monad. Saturn, probably an ultimately third-ray monad, and definitely an ultimately third-ray monad, probably a third-ray soul. Uranus, probably a third-ray personality, with a seventh-ray soul and a first-ray monad. But all of them having the third ray as a mental ray, and Mercury being probably a dual fifth ray, third ray monad, fifth ray first, third ray ultimately, Saturn, well, it's third ray finally, but it rules the concrete mental plane in an interesting sense, which is ruled by the fifth ray, and Uranus, well, definitely connected with electricity and with science, and is the mental ray of Uranus the fifth ray? Is the personality ray of Uranus the fifth ray? Some have thought it has been. But the third ray is definitely connected with Uranus. It's involved with so much motion, just the way Mercury is, and with various migrations and so forth. One day the rays of the planets will be accurately revealed. Right now we are speculative. And the rays of the constellations will be accurately revealed. The ray of our solar logos, the rays are now, I think, accurately revealed. DK gives us the second-ray soul and the second-ray personality and hints at the coming, the revelation of a second-ray monad, probably through a sub-fourth-ray monad. So the different mind is definitely connected with the air signs, though the element fire is also connected with mind. And we rise through the different types of mind by using these particular signs. Supermind triangulates. It's as simple as the triangle. A mind is dual. Supermind is the triangle which resolves the duality, and the universal mind is the circle which contains it all. That's one symbolic way, perhaps, of looking at it. As I said, the soul is certainly not the soul of the human being, but the soul of the solar logos, or the higher mental consciousness of the solar logos on the cosmic higher mental plane. And perhaps that type of mind is reflected in the atmic mind, to which Aquarius can give access. Mind will probably eventually fuse into one thing. We now distinguish the different parts of itself, but it will be a great unity, and we will be able to ascend and descend seamlessly, depending on the need and the level upon which mental faculties are required for perception or application. These three signs are preeminently signs of the mind of God. Well, you know, sometimes we associate air with intuition rather than with mind, but of course the transcendental mind is air, it is buddhi. We associate fire with mind often, but fire can be associated with spirit per se. The sea of fire relates to the logoic plane, which is that plane on the cosmic physical plane most emblematic or representative of spirit. So in conventional astrology, air is usually considered a mental indicator. And many people who have very strong air signs tend to be what we usually call mental, whereas those who have very strong fire signs, more, should we say, on the enthusiastic vital side. Those with prominent water signs, emotional, receptive, sensitive. Those with earth signs, practical, condensative. There's no such word, but tending to bring things into condensation, into crystallization, into tight, compact, relatively compact form. So these three signs are preeminently the signs of the mind of God as it expresses itself through man. I kind of wonder sometimes whether the logoic plane could not accord with supermind. If we want to keep everything on the cosmic physical plane for a moment instead of jumping to the cosmic mental, we'd have the mental plane, the optic plane, and the logoic plane, which is Uranian in nature in a sense, and thus connected with Aquarius, and thus with the Great Bear. The Great Bear being a constellation associated with Leo, which rules the logoic plane. So we'd have kind of a connection there of Great Bear, Leo, Great Bear, Aquarius, Uranus. So it is. These are signs which are preeminently signs of the mind of God as it expresses itself through man. The lower mind dominates at first. We can only perceive as our mind thinks once we reach the mental stage, and we live then, therefore, in a divided and dualistic and world in which we have only illusory notions, not seeing the unity or the synthesis. And this causes the recognition of the self and the not-self later to be overcome. We are not yet at the stage of consciousness when we can truly differentiate self from not-self. We're still dealing with that. And it's still important that we do. It's still important that we abstract from all things which are not our essence. Even if we discover all apparent non-essences to be essentially essence. But at first, Leo is involved here, and Gemini, you know, these two signs involved in individualization, giving the consciousness of primitive man that sense of I am and all other things I am not. When did this first start to emerge as a definite tendency? Well, was it really 3 million years ago after Sagittarian individualization when the arrows shot forth from the bow? Anyway, by 3 million years or so, the sense of self and not-self was becoming definite. And the primitive sense of ego as being all that is not the not-self grew. And the duality of perception under Gemini was prominent and exclusive of the true and underlying unity. So the lower mind dominates at first, causing the recognition of the self and not-self. Lower mind is very connected with Mercury, with Leo in one respect, with Gemini in another, or the essential dualism which underlies all manifestation. Maybe the only way we can sort things out and really learn about the nature of manifestation is to deal first with dualism. I've sometimes thought if you want to understand what a thing is, define its opposite. It's a Geminian-Mercurian way of perceiving. But if you contrast one thing from another, you're liable to get a clear definition of the two factors. The higher mind, however, steadily increases. Now, I suppose, you know, Saturn is involved with higher mind. When you look at the atomic plane and you look at the higher monastic plane, Uranus and Saturn could apply to either one. The higher mind, however, steadily increases in power and control. Higher mind is even found on the third and second subplanes of the mental plane, not yet in the triadal mind. Higher mind is the generic term. Maybe it refers to all three subplane activities on the higher mental plane. But higher mind steadily increases its power and control, producing the balancing of the pairs of opposites through the illumination which it brings to the lower mind. So there's always that point of equilibrium which is associated with Libra. Higher mind gives that. It's triadal mind. It's in itself, I suppose, is threefold, just the way Buddha is threefold and Atma is threefold. Cosmic Fire, page 177, demonstrates this. higher mind increases in power and control and balances the pairs of opposites, which in this case are soul and personality, perhaps. The lower mind becomes illumined and realizes the light of the soul. And the relation between soul and personality, it's ever Libra's jurisdiction, has the jurisdiction over the balancing of the higher and lower mind, or soul and personality. And then the soul, the eternal sun of mind, becomes the ultimate synthesis. See, he's dealing in a way with some lower things which reflect the higher things that he's just discussed. And then the soul, the eternal sun of mind, I suppose, you know, strongly influenced by the solar angel, our consciousness is strongly influenced by the solar angel, becomes the ultimate synthesis, well, ultimate in the microcosmic sense at least, focusing and relating the universal mind to the two lower aspects of the mind of God. What really then is the soul? We might say, perhaps, soul, in this context, relates to the spiritual triad as the true ego. So perhaps we're talking about triadal consciousness here. There are some different perspectives he seems to be offering. Obviously, soul is something a little higher in this context than the abstract mind or the higher mind. Soul is, well, I've said even the monad has soul. The awareness of the monad is soul. The awareness of the triad is soul. Soul is another name for consciousness. So if we're going to relate the universal mind to the abstract mind and the more concrete mind, that's one way of doing it. Or we can relate the cosmic mind to the atmic mind, to the mind which embraces both higher mind and lower mind. So Gemini can represent the concrete mind, Libra the abstract mind, and then the kind of soul we're talking about here, universal mind, can even be Atma. That's a more compressed way of understanding this. A more expansive way of understanding this is to look at universal mind as related to the cosmic mental plane, supermind as related to the spiritual triad in its Atmic phase, which is triangular and ruled by Libra, actually, as the chart on page 35 of Esoteric Astrology shows us. And then Gemini representing both the higher mind and the lower mind on the systemic mental plane. So soul is not just that thing which is confined to the higher mental plane. Soul is much more expansive than that. But in a way, DK may be talking about a kind of a tight triangle where we have lower mind, higher mind, and soul embracing all in the middle. So we have three possible ways of examining this. And the solar angel, its role has to be determined here as well. But soul is really consciousness, no matter what its limiting environment may be. So even monad, if you look at the consciousness of the monad, it is soul, but on a much higher plane. And certainly monad is connected with the universal mind. Monad is that factor which finds its home within the sun being Leo, universal mind being Aquarius, the opposite. A great expanse of awareness comes in for the monad, and it can attune, I think, with the Leo-Aquarius factor fairly well, especially the released monad, which I call the volatile essence, and which is released, I think, onto the logoic plane, where it has a special Leo connection, thus a connection with the sun, and hence with the opposite of the sun, Aquarius. The soul nature of the solar logos, I think, is ruled by Leo, but it's on a mental plane which seems to be correlated here with Aquarius, a cosmic mental plane, universal mind. So, you know, DK sometimes gives expansive relationships, then he compresses them, then he compresses them again, till they're quite close together, finally. Okay. Obviously, there's more to be thought through here. The important thing is to realize the way duality of Gemini passes through a fusion process in Libra, contemplation being a fusion process, into a synthesizing realization in Aquarius, where whatever we consider our local universe is realized as such. The term universal doesn't only apply to the great and only, temporarily only, universe in which we live, but it is the ability to be conscious of whatever whole we designate. If we designate the solar system as the whole, then universal consciousness understands and registers the whole of the solar system. If we relate the province of the one about whom naught may be said as our field of discussion, then universal mind is all that can register mentally that which goes on within the one about whom naught may be said. So what is universal keeps on expanding until we finally get to the true meaning of the word, which concerns the only one who is manifesting as the universe. And universal mind would then be the manus power of the universal, one and only universal logos, one and only at this time, anyway. Whatever, every universe apparently in the endless sequence of universes manifests as a universal logos, and really it's only one identity, the absolute, coming forth as the universal logos, but each one having a different algorithm, I think, each one having a different assignment or purpose, each one being but one identity, which is a representative of the one and only identity, which is the true being, non-being, the absoluteness. So soul here is a term which is not confined. I mean, when we begin to talk about universal mind, we can't just mean the consciousness within the causal body. Although there can be a beginning attunement with this capacious mind. After all, the monad can appreciate more of universal mind than the soul can, and the soul attunes to the monad. These are abstract issues. These hints should serve to show you one of the great interrelations which exists between the three crosses. I guess he would say that, you know, Gemini on the common cross, people cross, Libra cardinal, and Aquarius fixed, the three consummating signs for the three crosses are Capricorn cardinal, Aquarius fixed, and Pisces mutable. Those are the topmost signs or constellations on the vertical arm of these crosses. So each one of them represents a great synthesis, and the three of them together, the zodiacal synthesis, again subsumed in Aries, which goes forth with all that has been harvested from the previous cycle. These hints should serve to show you one of the great interrelations which exist between the three crosses, and with these we shall later deal when discussing them in greater detail in another part of this section on esoteric astrology, the crosses. So, interestingly, Gemini is the easternmost arm of the mutable cross, Libra the westernmost arm, as it were, of the cardinal cross. occupying sort of the 3 o'clock position to Gemini's 9 o'clock position. And the 12 o'clock position is occupied by Aquarius on the fixed cross. So interestingly, we have the ascendant, the descendant, and the midheaven. I wonder if this is how it always is. Let's see. Well, we begin with Aries on the cardinal cross, and then Leo is not. Leo is occupying the lowermost portion of the fixed cross, and Sagittarius, the westernmost portion of the mutable cross. So here, then, we have ascendant, IC, and the descendant. We could do this, I think, for all the triplicities in relation to the various crosses, and we would see how they, what squares they present, as it were. Not squares between the signs per se, of course not, because the triplicities are in trine relation to each other, but in terms of the position they occupy on the wheel, those positions are square to each other. There has to be a significance. Okay, it is interesting that in the note to tabulation 5, both Libra and Gemini are omitted from the list. Now, you know, we would go back here to tabulation 5. See if we can find that. Tabulation 5. And tabulation 5. Libra, yes, not there. And Gemini, not there. Because the fifth ray is not repeated, and the seventh ray is not repeated, at least among the rulers we are given. There will be later more rulers. We are dealing here with the problem of the contrast between 14 and 12. If the system were a 14-fold system, then 5 would be repeated and 7 would be repeated. And there are 14-fold systems which are of great occult significance, having to do, let's say, with the Great Bear and Little Bear, some 14, with certain facts in Egyptian mythology where the 14 is emphasized. 14 rules are involved. The significance of the number 14 is considerable. But at least in this tabulation 5, we have the fifth ray not shared with any other ruler in relation to any other constellation, nor is the seventh ray shared. And he'll probably give some very occult reason why this is so. Libra and Gemini are admitted. They're both actually, well, I was going to say they're both human signs. They're not really. One's the scales and the other the twins. This is not an oversight, but a point of true significance and an omission warranting recognition. You know how it goes when you look at 12-foldness and 14-foldness, or you look at 10-foldness and 12-foldness. If you can make the last of the 10 a kind of trinity, you can reach the 12, so it's 9 plus 3. If you can make the last of the 12 a kind of trinity, then it's 11 plus 3, then it's 14. There has to be a way of transiting between these numerical systems. I'm trying to think if this relates to the 5 and the 6 as well. Not in the same way. Although the double 5 and the double 6 are the 10 and the 12. And the way of transition from 10 to 12, which is important, because the 10 represents the human angle and the 12 the Davic, is by trinitizing the last member of the series of the 10. And the way to move from the 12 to the 14, I can't exactly say what the 14 stands for. It's somewhat related to the lunar mansions and the whole idea of the 28. It's also related to, you know, pyramidizing the 4 and the 1 and the 4, the 14. But if we want to make that transition, whatever these do stand for, we will trinitize the last member of the 12-fold series and add that trinity to the 11, making the 14. The full significances are not apparent to me, but there is a way to bridge these important consummating numbers. 14 seems to put together two sevens, and in the secret doctrine we often read of the seven above and the seven below in relation to the creation by Fohat. He's working the seven in the heavenly sphere and seven below. There are often seven interior, seven exterior. It has to do with reflection, I think. Reflection of an archetypal seven in a seven more closely related to form. Why aren't there just 12 rules? Well, I think, you know, we're dealing with the chakra system, really. The seven in the greater circle and the seven in the lesser circle. We're dealing with macrocosm and microcosm when we're dealing with the 14. And finally, the 28, if we combine all 14, the 28 being in a way the Om. If we look at the numerology of Om. So the way that the monad represents itself as seven principles and seven chakras in the different vehicles, this has to do with the number 14. There are many ways to think of it, and more will occur. We cannot say that any of these is more important. We have the tenfold tree of life, 12-fold zodiac, and the 14-fold double chakra system. None of these can be dispensed with, of course. All of them are integral to the constitution of man. So it's a point of true significance and an omission warranting recognition. Well, I suppose it's also warranting understanding. The omission is based on two facts. First, that there was a time, as you have heard, when there were only 10 signs. Now, how interesting, because DK says there will be. There will be also another future time when there are only 10 signs. But how is the 10 arrived at? That's the question. First, that there was a time, as you have heard, when there were only 10 signs, and in those ancient days, as in the present time, there was the divergence of opinion among the astrological scientists. How interesting. Because where the third ray is active, as it ever is in astrology, there's always going to be different points of view, contrasting points of view and different perspectives. The truth being one, but the perspectives being important. They differed as to which... Interesting, you know, how much about astrology and the ancient zodiacs is being discussed in this Libran chapter, with Libra ruled by the third ray and being an important sign in relation to astrology. There's two of the very strong planets associated with astrology, Saturn and Uranus, are very strong in Libra, as is the third ray, and both of those planets having a very strong third ray representation. So they differed as to which of the 10 signs might the 10 signs might be. Remember, always 12 constellations, but 10 signs, right? So it has to do with a particular configuration of reception that humanity is capable of at any given time, or pre-humanity. The difference as to which the 10 signs might be, and in this connection there were several schools of thought, but mainly two of importance. One group fused or made out of one sign, or made one sign out of Leo Virgo. And we did discuss that. the five outgoing signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Leo, Virgo. We discussed that as the 11. Well, at least we discussed it in context of an 11-fold division. Here he's talking about 10. And they perpetuated their belief in the Sphinx. Must be very ancient. Blavatsky, you know, doesn't talk in terms of 3 or 4 or 5 thousand years, but more in terms of 70,000, 60 or 70,000 years. They perpetuated their belief in the Sphinx. The other school, well, how would you arrive at 10 by just making Leo Virgo? Don't know. One group fused or made one sign out of Leo Virgo and perpetuated their belief in the Sphinx. You still have 11. So something else must have been done as well. The other omitted Gemini and Libra altogether. Why? Well, interestingly, in one respect, constellationally, you can see how the triangle of Libra was called the claws of the scorpion. So maybe what we later recognize as Libra was simply considered Scorpio. As for Gemini, I don't know. They were of an earlier date than the latter, who in reality had a zodiac of 11. Okay, indeed. This is a fact of importance to you today. Why so? The zodiac of 10, the zodiac of 11. One wonders whether relationship between soul and personality was possible with Gemini and Libra omitted. The great pairs of opposites under Gemini was not recognized, perhaps, and the fusion, magnetic fusion under Venus, the drawing together of these opposites in a kind of fused marriage relationship in Libra was also not acknowledged. It was not a dynamic which was given much thought. Perhaps man at the time just didn't engage in such processes because it was an earlier date yet. So this is a fact of importance to you today. Well, we've had a zodiac of 8. I guess it ended with Scorpio in a way, and perhaps it was pre-individualization. Somewhere there was a hint about that. I can't find it at the moment. Zodiac of 10 with Gemini Libra eliminated. Zodiac of 11 with the Sphinx made and Libra central. Our present zodiac of 12. Maybe another imminent zodiac of 11 with Virgo Libra fused. And then what would be the... I guess Virgo Libra would be the central sign, no longer Libra itself. And an imminent zodiac of 10. One day, an eventual zodiac of 10. With both Virgo Libra fused and Pisces Aries fused. So that is the progress. Let's see. We can look at this. From 8 to 10. To 11, to 12, to 11, to 10. Rather reminds one of the way the chains in a planetary scheme manifest, going from a position of simplicity to complexity and back to simplicity. The numbers there of importance, 3, 7, and 10. 3, 7, 10, 7, 3 might be the way it works out. And maybe finally after 3, 1, which is suggesting the Trinity. The other point of note and of a relative importance is that Gemini and Libra are two strictly human signs. Well, I remember that he had said that, but of course Libra itself doesn't show the human glyph the way Aquarius does. They are the signs of the ordinary man. And yet the five strictly human signs were called something other. So we have an apparent contradiction here, perhaps. The five strictly human signs were called Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius. We recall that from our studies just a little while ago. And yet now Gemini is called strictly human. And yet it is one of the subjective signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, standing before the incarnation of a human being and in Cancer. So anyway, Gemini upon the mutable cross stands for man's humanity, which I suppose is characterized by dualistic mind, as we have been reading. Whilst Libra upon the cardinal cross rules man's subjective and spiritual life. Well, the higher of the pairs of opposites is that with which we seek to be married, we, the aspiring personality. There is something of the ability to merge with the object in Libra, which perhaps doesn't exist in Gemini, and to know the subject and object as one, which is certainly telling us about the eminent power of man's subjective nature over the object. The other signs in their consummation carry man beyond the stage of ordinary humanity and produce the following states of consciousness. Well, all right, you know, DK says this and he means it, but we do have to think, does not Libra carry a man to Shambhala? Is it not the royal road to Shambhala? Is it not the, and when a man reaches, when a man reaches that point in Shambhala, is he not a Chohan? Is he, they are no longer men as are the masters, but having passed beyond that lesser stage have linked themselves to the great center in the highest secret place. So anyway, TK gives us these various perspectives, and they all have to be linked together. We've just been told the five strictly human signs were as listed above. Now Gemini is connected. And we have to remember what Libra can do for the man, producing a kind of marriage in the heavens of soul and personality, but perhaps producing as well a marriage of the triad and soul-infused personality, and leading a man beyond perhaps ordinary humanity as well. It's just something that I reflected on, but let's see what the Tibetan is saying here. These other signs take a man beyond his human nature. So the following signs take a man beyond his strictly human nature, even though some of them are included in the strictly human signs. So these apparent contradictions will have to be resolved with subtlety of thought. And no doubt they are no contradiction for the Tibetan who put them here, but we simply don't have that necessary subtlety to resolve the issue. Aries and Virgo are related to the cosmic Christ, the universal, which is the cosmic Christ, and the individual Christ, which is a reflection of the cosmic Christ. So certainly a Christ is far beyond the normal human state. They carry a man beyond the stage, beyond the stage of ordinary humanity. Well, ordinary humanity, or even beyond the stage of the disciple. Well, maybe not, ordinary humanity. And is he saying, really, that Gemini and Libra do not carry man beyond the stage of ordinary humanity? How do we understand that? Because even if we experience the marriage in the heavens, in Libra, it's beyond the stage of ordinary humanity. And if we experience the soul personality dialogue and the linking of soul and personality in Gemini and the linking of spirit and soul with Jupiter in Gemini, it's beyond ordinary humanity. How do we understand this? Okay, but anyway, we will at least take a look at the way in which the following types are that which transcends ordinary humanity. Taurus and Pisces are the world's saviors, Buddha and the Christ. So saving through light and saving through love, and certainly beyond the stage of ordinary humanity. Leo and Aquarius, the world's servers. Hercules is a very Leonian character, the bright glory of Hera, the bright glory of the soul, which is Leonian and radiatorially Aquarius, and world servers are certainly beyond the ordinary humanity. Sagittarius and Capricorn, the world initiates, i.e. masters. Well, Capricorn rules 5 initiations, Sagittarius the first 2, but is orienting towards the 6th. At the 6th, we have to have a direction based upon a choice. It's a Libra-Sagittarian combination. Libra makes the choice. It does, interestingly, rule the 6th initiation, as does the 3rd ray. And Sagittarius determines the direction to be followed as a result of that choice. Sagittarius and Capricorn, the world initiates, but also, well, he told us how you become initiate before you are initiated. So in Sagittarius, he hinted that you become initiate, and I suggested at least in consciousness you do so, even if you can't necessarily prove it through every fiber of your being, as you must in Capricorn. And Cancer and Scorpio, the triumphant disciples. Scorpio is certainly associated with discipleship, and Cancer has plenty of the 6th ray and the integrative, unificatory tendency to make of one the disciple. But we could certainly find Gemini and Libran tendencies which could place the man who possessed those tendencies as beyond the ordinary human. So, you know, it provokes a little perplexity here. But, you know, DK has a special point of view which is going to a special point of view which is going to justify his choices. The emphasis, however, on Gemini and Libra, as far as humanity is concerned, is on human attainment. I suppose intelligence and right human relations, and achieving a point of balance before other attainments become possible. So he's focusing on only some of the possible attainments of human beings in relation to these two signs. The recognition of a state of duality comes with Gemini, and the balancing of many forces and the attainment of correct spiritual values prior to a launch into group consciousness and group relations, basically the relations that are real to the soul, this is occurring in Libra. So, you know, when DK offers these ideas, we have to think about what he said before, wherein he means something a little different than we may have thought. He may have used the same words, but he means something a little different. And we have to understand what that may be. It is also peculiarly instructive to study the rulers of this sign. Peculiarly instructive. Now, DK never wastes words. So if he says something like this, unusually, especially instructive to study the rulers of this sign. From the angle of orthodox astrology, Venus rules Libra, which gives Libra its usual reputation of being harmonious, loving, polite, agreeable, so forth. But there's so much more to Libra than is indicated by the Venus rulership, as we learn more and more as we study this vast science. Whilst esoterically speaking, Uranus rules. That has so much to do with relations in the modern age. which are certainly anything but conventional. And as Libra grows stronger and stronger in the planetary horoscope, these unconventional relationships, transient though they may be, will assume a greater prominence, as if they were truly lawful, but in a way, not all of them are. Saturn is the ruler in this sign of that stupendous creative hierarchy, which is one of the three major groups of builders, called the lesser builders, but lesser not in the sense of the unconscious lesser builders, forming part of the third aspect of divinity, but only part. The fleur-de-lis is there found, and, you know, if we were to, well, I can't get into that. Maybe I can get into it here. Say the computer. Well, let's say new volume. We'll say data D, and we'll so go this way. Fellowship of the Cosmic Fire, and we'll look at this as AAB diagrams, and we will find the creative hierarchies. And here they are, and we see the Libran hierarchy right up here, the lesser builders conferring form, but probably form on the dense physical levels of the cosmic physical plane. They are higher than the human hierarchy. They are higher than the fifth creative hierarchy of solar angels, which may be a dual hierarchy and have a much higher part. This is the enigma. So he uses the word stupendous. We cannot avoid the implications of that word. Okay. That stupendous creative hierarchy, which is one of the three major groups of builders forming part of the third aspect of divinity, we do notice the symbol, the triple flowers, the fleur-de-lis. It's another symbol. Their goal is the giving of form to the sons of mind, and thereby offering opportunity for sacrifice and service. Well, the solar angels do this as well, don't they? But what types of form are given? The vestures of the Buddha? There are forms, there are vehicles in the triadal levels. And so perhaps we have the triadal vehicles, which are very important to the Buddha and to the Christ assuming them, as forms. A study of the relation of this hierarchy to that of the human egos, the fourth creative hierarchy, will prove most illuminating and is handled somewhat in my earlier treatise on cosmic fire, maybe when he's dealing with the creative hierarchies, and I think when he's dealing with the transposed section from those creative hierarchies into this book, Esoteric Astrology from Cosmic Fire. The nature and purpose of these three rulers will emerge with clarity if this is done. Well, the third aspect of divinity is involved here. We have three rulers. Shall we say that Saturn relates to the first aspect and to the third aspect of divinity in general, but the first aspect within the third, and Venus to the second aspect, and Uranus to the third? That's one way of doing it. But how to study this third creative hierarchy? This is a problem. Not much is given, and we must distinguish them from the solar angels, who are a lower hierarchy, apparently the fifth. I guess you could say of this third creative hierarchy that they were not men in the immediately previous solar system, but were probably men in a rather earlier solar system. The problem does remain, of course, whether the dual hierarchy of the fifth, the solar angelic hierarchy being dual, has to do with Agnishvatas on the higher mental plane and something lower on the lower mental plane, or whether we're talking about Agnishvatas in contrast, well, the, all the denizens of the systemic mental plane in contrast to a much higher hierarchy, something like the fifth almost liberated hierarchy. It's a wall one runs into there, and one can only speculate. Well, we seem to have come to the end of, yes, we're at the end of Esoteric Astrology 81, Section C, and we are on page 243. And we will begin with Esoteric Astrology 81, page 243. I've realized, of course, that it may take 300 programs of this nature, 300 hour-long programs anyway, in order to work one's way through the entire book, at least the way I'm doing it at the moment. And I'm trying to take a leisurely and fairly exhaustive pace, where whatever significant comes to mind may be brought forward. It's not a strictly linear approach, obviously. So we'll see, hopefully there will be time to complete this process. We're, I would say, one-third of the way through. And that's taken about a year and a half, but not of constant work. If I could just deal with this in terms of constant work, it would obviously finish sooner. So we will take a little break and then move on to Section D, continuing with Libra.